This is the Ag Market Network's monthly cotton conference call, brought to you by Certified FiberMax. You can find more online at agmarketnetwork.net.
We want to welcome everyone today to our November 11th Ag Market Network monthly cotton teleconference. I'm Pat McClatchy. We're joined today by our distinguished cotton panel. It's led today by Dr. John Robinson. John is professor and extension specialist in cotton marketing with Texas A&M University. The rest of our panel is made up of Dr. O.A. Cleveland, Gerald Nieper, and Kip Butts. We also want to recognize our sponsor, Bayer Crop Science. We thank them for their support. They make our programs possible. John, thanks for being with us today and leading our discussion of the cotton market.
Thank you, Pat. Good morning, everybody. So what I'm going to do is discuss briefly, summarize this, what I'm characterizing as pretty neutral supply and demand reports with U.S. and world numbers. And then I want to shift gears just slightly and take a slightly larger view of kind of the demand outlook. So looking at the WASDE, going into it, I want to acknowledge that I probably am the winner of the November pool. That is, the reporters call up a group of people every WASDE or a week before and ask them what they think is going to happen. And my default position is usually, well, if I don't have a really good reason to think something's going to change, I usually say no change. And no change was the winner with this report. Looking at the U.S. numbers, and I was sort of expecting this. There was a small decrease in production. And that came about because they reduced some harvested acres in South Carolina, which is not surprising. And then there was a kind of a mishmash of yield increases and yield decreases. And I had been expecting that based on just anecdotal things I'd been hearing out of dryland West Texas, some people looking around and saying, hey, you know, here in September and October, it looks like we might have a little better yields than we were thinking we might have in August. And so I was expecting a ratcheting up on the Texas production forecast. Frankly, that I probably wasn't really expecting to see it until December, but it happened here. They bumped up Texas. They bumped up a number of other states, Alabama, looks like, California, New Mexico, it's not much acres. Oklahoma. Anyway, they bumped up some states, they reduced some states, and they reduced the ones that we were all expecting to be reduced, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, the southeastern states hit by rains and flood, and a few other adjustments. So basically it was like a 50,000 bale decrease overall in production, which was not particularly surprising to me. And everything else was pretty unchanged. That change in production was basically offset in the fudge factor category of the unaccounted category. And so ending stocks were unchanged. And so we have basically a neutral report. Looking ahead, you know, next month I would expect a little more of the same, a little bit more supply tinkering, not very large, I wouldn't think. You know, maybe exactly the same trend, some reductions in a few places and bumping it up in a few. But I don't really expect this supply number to change much going forward, and I don't expect it to have much of a market impact, which is why I was planning on talking about demand things here later on. But wrapping up with the world numbers, there was actually a small step in the right direction, a reduction in world-ending stocks projected in November compared to October. It was about an 880,000 bale reduction. It all happened in foreign places. There was a little bit of tinkering with carry-in in a few places, like Africa, European Union, Pakistan. It was just very slight. And then they made some production adjustments, some of which have been pretty well expected. People have been saying that that USDA's estimate of India's production has been too high. Well, they came down 500,000 bales, which may not satisfy those people. But anyway, there's an incremental step in the direction that some analysts have been looking for a number of months now. A smaller reduction in Chinese production, 300,000 bales. and some other tankering fan. They knocked down Pakistan. So India, Pakistan, and China all had production reductions in the forecasted production. Domestic use was also went down, and so you've got two different factors there that, depending on which one's the biggest, would dominate, and it was the cut in production that dominated. You know, and this is, I think, the second or maybe third WASD in a row where they've trimmed foreign production, and I guess there's two ways you can look at that. One is sort of pessimistically and say, well, gee, this is just yet more evidence of perhaps, you know, weak demand, slow economic growth, that sort of thing. Or you can look at it and say, well, this is just simply, you know, if we have less supply to consume, then we'll ratchet down our domestic use number a little bit and don't worry about it too much. And if I had to choose between those two outlooks, I'd probably at this point just choose the latter, since they did trim the production number. I'm not too worried about the drop in domestic use, although, and Gerald can talk more about this because he sells cotton for a living, you know, I still hear anecdotal statements from merchant shippers that, well, you know, demand is slow, business is slow, there's not much happening out there, and that's continuing to be not an encouraging picture. But anyway, my assessment of the world numbers, again, is it's basically a neutral kind of outcome. I wouldn't really expect much of a market, of a price response with that. So, shifting gears slightly, I was anticipating that whatever supply adjustments happened in this report would be more or less inconsequential, that they wouldn't break us out of this futures price range that we've been stuck in for a year. And so, you know, and it's not uncommon with any kind of, when we have supply adjustments, they tend to, you have a shock, you have a surprise, you find more cotton than you expected or less, and the market does something, but you know, oftentimes it's a quick sort of adjustment. It's a wiggle on the price pass. These supply responses tend to be short-lived. They play out. What tends to be longer-lived, we all know, is changes in demand, improvements in demand, which is, and when I say demand, I'm not really talking about the week-to-week fluctuations in export sales. That'd be quantity demand changes for the econ professors in the crowd in response to price. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about big picture changes because of taste. You know, people like cotton more, or they're used to, you know, they put up the polyester and don't care. Changes in taste, you know, young consumers, housewives, people that may be buying the sportswear and, you know, don't care about whatever the blend is. That kind of stuff. And population growth and general income growth and you know, growth in the economy, which goes to income and that sort of thing. So there's this whole issue of the big picture and demand. It's harder for me to get my brain around it. It's harder to get measures of it. You know, we all on this panel give forecasts, you know, the market, give outlook talks, write about it. And it's, you know, you sort of grab at what you can. We look at news stories in the financial press about how the economy is doing and how consumer sentiment is doing. And we look a little bit more focused. We look at, like, retail apparel. That makes the most sense. But it's hard to track how those things go and what we read about. It's hard to relate that back to the cotton market. So there is a set of data that I've been following, and actually I believe Pat may have posted this on the Twitter account for Ag Market Network. And
yeah, John, let me interrupt you and say anyone that would like to see this chart you're going to refer to can go to the Ag Market Network Facebook account or the Ag Market Network Twitter account, and you'll be able to see that.
Okay, thanks. And well, all that is showing is basically several market prices overlaid over each other from about the time of the 2010 cotton price spike onward, and the prices that are shown in there, they're in percent terms. It shows cotton price, it shows yarn, and it shows two cotton-dominated apparel, and then just general apparel. And those are measured, again, by just indices, but it shows you the percent change in each of those things. And a friend of mine at Cotton Incorporated put this together. I found it useful, and particularly when I'm talking to groups of growers, just kind of to explain where we've been recently. Now, this is showing from the 2000 price spike onward, so the whole reason they put this chart together was initially to illustrate how things, when things happen upstream, the cotton lint market, which we had this price spike, which was sort of a freaky, you know, over-exaggeration, but, you know, a lot of things happened there. We pulled down inventories for years, and then we had some bad things happen in the new crop situation. We had a shortage, and mills were scrambling, and they were under contracts to, you know, buy stuff, and they went crazy, and they, you know, cotton prices went over $2. And according to this chart, if you're looking at it in percent terms, at the peak, cotton prices rose from where they were. They rose 154% and peaked. And then what's interesting then is to look further downstream. Well, what did that do? Well, okay, cotton prices having such a spike, that represented a cost push. It was a rise in input costs for yarn, and then further down and further down and further down. So all those other markets, the yarn markets, the apparel markets, so they all peaked. They all peaked less than cotton did because there's other things besides just the cost of cotton fiber involved in producing yarn. And you go further down, and there's a whole lot more involved in producing clothes and selling and distributing clothing. So the effect is smaller the further out you go. Well, now we're in a situation that happens in other markets too, grains, meat. We're in a situation where we've sort of shifted gears, I think. We've shifted gears. Now it's no longer a cost push downstream. Now we're in a situation where weak economic growth and perhaps changes in consumer tastes are working their way back up and having an influence. And as an analyst and as somebody that's interested in forecasting cotton prices, I'm sitting here asking myself, well, what does this tell me? I'm not really sure looking at the apparel, you know, apparel prices apparel prices and retail consumption has a few months this year they've been lower month over month and then they've been okay, but they're sort of flat. In this chart, the prices of the apparel market, the CPI, is kind of flat. It hadn't really, it's just been the most level of all of these things. What some of the data show us, though, is that since this price spike, the apparel that's been coming back, the imports have been, one thing that's clear is that they've been lighter in weight and they've been more blended. So there's less cotton in the stuff that's coming back to us, and that response has not changed. It hasn't adjusted yet with lower cotton prices. It hasn't adjusted yet, maybe because we haven't gotten low enough, and maybe because polyester is not expensive enough relative to cotton, and maybe because people's tastes have adjusted. I hope not, but maybe they don't care about the blend of other stuff besides cotton in their apparel. But that hasn't changed, and that may be the most, I don't know, concrete, scary thing I can think about when I'm looking at these kinds of things and wondering how is stuff going to feed back up to the cotton market. You know, because there's not that much of a percent change in it way down at retail apparel as there is, you know, when the cotton price changes. It's a very small, less than 5%, I think, change in associated in apparel prices way downstream. So the yarn market is the most informative one of these to look at. And so there, you know, again, the issue is it's how much yarn, what is a flat, low yarn price telling us about the upcoming and future demand for our cotton fiber and for our cotton exports. And, you know, when I stand in front of a group of growers and put this chart up there and look at these prices and I look at the yarn market and I say, well, you know, at least what it's telling me is that things are not booming downstream. You know, we're not a booming yarn markets, and certainly further down we don't. And so I don't see anything there to suggest that it's going to be pulling up, really pulling up on cotton prices, pulling up on the lint price. Now, I need to be more complicated than that, and members of the panel will when we start talking about, well, are we talking about high-quality fiber? Because there's certainly a shortage of that and a demand for that. We've almost got two markets there. But just base-grade cotton fiber, of which there is a lot in the world, I don't see anything in this demand picture to suggest that on the demand side, things will be pulling us up. So it's not a it's not a rosy outlook, but it's just not the clearest. It's not the clearest connection either. So that really, that was what I wanted to lay out there, Pat. I'm coveting the responses from the more experienced members of this panel about how they sort of look at the big demand picture and how they relate all the different little tidbits of information from the general economy and from, you know, CPI stats that get put out and all that kind of stuff, back up to projecting where we're headed with cotton. So I'll just sort of lay that out there. It's sort of open-ended, but I think that's sort of the open-ended kind of lack of information world that we're in when we're trying to forecast these things. So there, I'll leave it at that, Pat, and hand it back to you.
Okay. Well, let's just open that up from there. Gerald, Kip, OA, any thoughts?
So this is Kip. I kind of very much agree with what he was talking about on the demand side. It's relatively uncertain, I guess, to a degree right now, but the world economy just doesn't want to grow very well. And I think we're seeing that on the demand side of this equation for cotton. The polyester prices continue to be very, very cheap, and I think that the comment that John made regarding the consumer demand has shifted to a degree to that cheaper fiber because of the world economy is not growing. And not that cotton is necessarily a luxury item. It's very comfortable, very desirable. But I think what's happening here is the consumer is looking for the, quote, cheapest product, and the textile industry is supplying what they can to get the consumer to buy. So I think much of the problem we're dealing with right now is cheap alternative fibers, primarily polyester, which is really taking a bigger share of this market. Now, Gerald is right on the firing line with this. He may have a different opinion or a more informed one than I have. So I don't know, Gerald, would you have anything to add to that?
No, you know, just anecdotally, you go in the store and you look at different things, and there's just blends everywhere. You know, the man-made fiber sector has done a really terrific job of convincing the consumer that that their goods are every bit as good, if not better, than cotton. I mean, case in point, and I think I shared this with somebody, is, you know, Cindy Walters in our office was at a Relay for Life fundraiser. And she's just sitting there, and she was helping to organize things. And it was a hot day in Tulare, California, which is kind of in the middle of cotton country. And it was about 100 degrees out. And so behind her, these women are talking, and she overheards them. And this one woman is saying, I can't believe we have these 100% cotton T-shirts. You know, can't we get some of that, you know, some of that tight-fitting, you know, polyester fiber and stuff, and you know, so it'll wick away and keep us cool. It's like, what? You know, where did, you know. So these people have been conditioned, you know, by these, you know, by the dry fits and everything else. And I guess one of the girls went out and found a T-shirt and came back and says, well, at least it has 50% polyester in it. And it's a lot better. I mean, it's just incredible the shift in the mindset among these consumers, and I just don't know that that we're getting our message across effectively that you know, that cotton is really the better, greener fiber. You know, there was an article the other day talks about home fires now, how dangerous they are for firemen. If anybody saw the Today Show, that when firemen go in, they don't know what sort of fumes are going to be breathing because of the synthetic fibers in the home furnishings, and they burst into flames much faster. It doesn't matter if it's a fabric, it's the batting in the sofas and the couch or the bed or the beds. So, you know, trying to combat some of this this messaging from the polyester and the man-made fiber folks with some of these other studies, just showing really how bad these synthetic fibers are for the environment and for people, you know, themselves. It seems to be of paramount importance, I would think, to Cotton Incorporated as we move on down the road.
Is OA with us?
I think
okay. No. All right. Anybody else want to contribute to that?
Chuckle Gerald's statement there. We got to be careful not to underestimate the power of marketing. And I think synthetic fiber, man-made fiber business has done an incredible job at just kind of echoing what Gerald was saying.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the markets. And John, you brought up that we've been in a trading range for a year, but in recent weeks, it's gotten even tighter. Volume seems to be very low. Any thoughts on that, Gerald? Why have things gotten so incredibly slow for these markets?
You know, I guess the easy answer is everything seems to be in balance right now. There's no shortage of cotton. There's a lack of demand. There's no shortage of cotton. There's just enough hand-to-mouth buying to keep people interested, and when this market falls down to a certain level, you know, okay, they'll step up and you know, add some stocks to their inventory. It goes up, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're searching around for some other cheap alternative out there, whether it's Brazilian or West African or Uzbek or whatever it is, whatever the cheap alternative is. You know, they definitely have this mindset of they're going to only pay X for the fiber right now. So, and when we come down to a certain level, yeah, they jump over to U.S. cotton because they know it's a better quality experience than some of these other growths. But, you know, you start rising very much, and it didn't take long for them to call up and look for something cheaper.
So I wouldn't, Gerald, see that changing at least until you run out of new crop supplies from these other places that you mentioned, which would
yes.
take that's into the spring, right? You know, so we've got supplies in the loan and that are going to sit there for a while, I expect.
I would definitely think that it's going to take until the early springtime to start taking a real bite out of U.S. cotton. It was pleasant last week export sales report. I think this week's export sales report will be similar. I'm a little surprised. You know, you said that you were surprised that you weren't surprised at yesterday's supply demand report. You know, I hate to say it. You know, I think you can easily make the case that why do they have U.S. exports any larger than probably 9 million bales right now? I don't know. It's a little early in the season to take that drastic of a cut, but I'm a little bit surprised that they haven't taken some small whack. You know, even 200,000 bales yesterday on the export side of the equation. That's my thought on that.
Yeah.
But it'll take a go ahead. Sorry, John.
I was just saying I don't disagree. You know, it's been kind of tepid week by week. Again, I don't see anything really booming there. So, yeah, if I was incrementally, if it was me, just I would be probably incrementally adjusting that export forecast a little lower.
Well, we're still bringing this crop in, so we're going to look a little long term here, but looking into the spring and decision-making time for farmers as far as planting cotton for this next crop year, what are we going to get it done with these prices, or what does it take to entice farmers to plant cotton?
Pat, you know, let me go back to your previous question. You know, something else is that, you know, year over year right now, we're down 13.3 million bales from this last year. you go back to 1960 and you've never seen a larger drop in world production year over year. And it's likely going to be bigger as they make a further adjustment to China. They're probably going to come down with India a little bit more. And so there's naturally a little bit of nervousness out there in terms of how, you know, small the crop could be. And yes, there's a lot of stocks. They're still all locked up in China, and we don't expect them to be coming out anytime soon. You know, you got a huge, you got the largest foreign less China production consumption deficit since 2002. You just got a lot of things out there that I think make it uneasy for people to want to get really short the market. But as we said earlier, there's enough cotton out there to keep people from, you know, deciding that they got to load up on the long side, too. So, as far as the springtime is concerned, my feeling is that I don't know that the market's going to react the way it should react at this springtime. I mean, I don't think the market will react to new crop until you get past the northern hemisphere plantings. And to try to keep these, you know, you continue to try to work some of these stocks down. You know, not only China, you know, it looks like we could possibly have, you know, not a few too many, but there are sufficient supplies elsewhere to keep this market comfortably supplied for a while.
Well, that brings up what's been touched on. There are two markets. There's the cotton sitting in warehouses in China and other types of cotton of that type, and then there's the higher quality cotton that you find here. We can look at a real shortage of high quality that I guess is what the mills want, but then we refer to the ocean of cotton that's the lower quality. So I guess it makes for a more complicated market.
Pat, I wanted to say just one more thing about planting, because there's if you look at relative prices, grains, alternative crops, soybeans, and cotton for 16, to me it looks kind of maybe perhaps more break-even for 16 than it was when we were figuring this for the 15 crop. But I think something's going to come into play, and I don't like the sound of this, but something that is going to come into play is that there may be a financial constraint farmers and their bankers this year that may be a heck of a lot more significant than it was for 15, because I'm going to grossly project this probably more broadly than I should, but I think last year a lot of bankers looked at 60-cent futures and said, well, we've got good soil moisture, you may make really strong yields, hopefully the same yields you made in 10 or in 7, and so yeah, we'll make you this loan, Mr. Farmer. And they did it, and it didn't quite work out. You know, prices never changed, and maybe they've got discounts because of getting rained on and high leaf or whatever. Anyway, they're not getting a good price, and they didn't make the record yields. They didn't make the record yields, and that'll compensate for the sub-profitable prices. They got through this experience this year. They're going to go to their settlement with their banker, and I think quite a few of them are probably going to be told, no, we're not loaning you money next year, period, or we're certainly not going to loan you enough to grow a cotton crop. I think that's going to really keep the lid on acres. Even I'm talking about here in Texas, I think that's going to keep the lid on acres. Even without the high sorghum prices and basis that we had last year, I just don't really see much of an expansion. So I'm looking for more of the same, if not a slight reduction.
You know, OA brought this up back in July, this very thing that he had been hearing about being able to get financed in 2016. So that's going to be interesting.
Drumbeat. Yeah.
Well, any other thoughts before we get into our forecast for prices?
One thought of an area outside the U.S., we don't talk about that a lot in a situation like this, but I expect we're going to see some pretty good declines. We'll probably see a nice decline in area in China. Their domestic policy is going to discourage some cotton plantings. India may get a little bit of a decline as well. So, but that's not going to, I think, to John's point earlier, I don't know that that's going to impact the market dramatically short term. And to Gerald's point earlier, it's going to take time to see that, the Northern Hemisphere crop projections, before the market reacts to that. We still got plenty of cotton around, which kind of puts a lid on prices, but we may be a year or so, hopefully just a year away. I'm not sure 2016 without some kind of crop problem fixes the supply-demand situation to a more bullish outlook or not.
Okay. Well, let's do this as we talk about our looking out in the future and kind of giving our thoughts on prices. John, I'll start with you. Give us, and time's running out on this December contract, give us your thoughts on December, and then give us your thoughts on the price for December cotton for next year between, you know, let's say by springtime or early summer.
Yeah, all right. Well, for what we have remaining, you know, I kind of see us, I'd say, 61 to about, I don't know, 60, with harvest time on setting, 61 to 65. I would just peg it in there. December 16 futures have been tracking the 15. Like I say, I think we'll have a low planted acres. We have good moisture this winter. NOAA thinks that's going to become normal as of June. So, you know, I could see a situation where a low level gets planted and then it gets really hot and dry, and that might push us to 72 for December 16. So I'm going to say 62 to 72 for that.
Okay. Kip, give us your forecast.
Well, for December, I don't see, maybe we get to 60 cents again, and the range that that John talked about is certainly reasonable. I don't see anything really to impact December much. If anything, I think maybe March can gain against December over time as far as the spread factor, but I don't think that's going to be terribly significant either. The 16 crop, I just, as we speak, I don't see any reason for this to really rally without some sort of a catalyst. And right now, the demand remains rather weak, which means in relative terms, which means you know, there's just not much out there. So I'm thinking a 60 to 66, 68 cent range for December 16, based on what we think we know today. So, but John makes a good point. If you get hot and dry out there, you can get a rally on that just because. So, you know, I'm still hanging on to this sort of 60 cent range right now. Stay in the 60s, not to say we can't get in the 70s, but I think at least what we think we know today, that's sort of a stretch.
Okay, Gerald?
I agree with John. 61 to 65 cents between now and the expiration of this December contract for next December. I actually see kind of, and I'm not sure, and I think it's going to happen sometime in the April through September time period. I'm just not sure exactly when it's going to happen in there, but I think we're going to try to make a run for the mid to upper 70s. Just because I think it's sort of setting up that way technically. Fundamentally, it's not setting up that way, and for all the reasons that we just talked about, but it just kind of seems like, you know, some things are setting up for kind of a bull run, and it's probably going to be because of a weather problem, you know, someplace. I mean, but I can kind of see that happening, you know. Maybe that's just the eternal optimist in me on this thing. You know, I think when you come into analyzing a market, you know, or even trading a market, you know, you're either by nature a bull or a bear, and you always tend to look at things in either bullish terms or bearish terms, and that always frames your initial thoughts on things. And I guess my bias, you know, because I represent, you know, a grower organization, is my bias is to tend to look at things in a bullish base, in a bullish light. But that's not always the smartest thing to do, but that's what happens. But I think I see the potential for the mid to upper 70s. I don't know that it would stay there for a heck of a long time, but I think it's certainly a real possibility.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I would echo that. If it's a supply-driven shock or catalyst that gives us the higher prices next year, don't plan on it being long-lived. So whatever marketing plan one has, it better be nimble.
Okay. Well, let's wrap up our meeting for today. I want to thank Dr. John Robinson for leading our cotton panel discussion. Thanks to our panel. And also, again, want to thank Bayer Crop Science for being our sponsor. Also, a thanks to you, our listeners, listening live and on a delayed basis. We appreciate you joining us here today for the Ag Market Network. Thank you.